You are about to journey against the current of contemporary thought and beyond the troubled waters of daily news to the very source of our extraordinary culture. You are going upstream with Cashel and Edge.
You know, here we are at Upstream with Cashel and Edge, and I just did a complete mouth check for Loy because he had a salad
just
before
a salad,
he got here.
Man, you know, the green monster can get in there.
And it can come out later.
Yeah.
You know, sort
yeah.
of like in, what was that, Alien, you know, just kind of pops out of your face.
Yeah,
you know?
Hit people in the face with salad.
No, you don't want to do that.
Salad shooter.
But, you know, we don't want to see anyone end up in the hospital because we're all about health on this show.
Absolutely. Here and we are. Hey, you got a book with you, Jack.
I have a book, and we're going to have a do something a little different today. We're going to ask for audience participation, even though this is not a call-in, obviously. But
yeah, how are we going to do that?
Well, if you go to you can either, you know, where our websites show up respectively at the end of the show.
Okay.
Cashel.com or LoyEdge.com, mm-hmm. right? And also, if you're watching it on YouTube, there's a comment section,
okay,
et cetera. And then other places have comment sections, you know, other apps that we're on all over the world. You know, it's a worldwide phenomenon, Upstream, Cash and Edge. But I was going to talk about my, let me just put this up here, my novel, The Hunt, right? It came out.
The rare Cashel novel, because most of the books you've read
are nonfiction. Right.
And what is this, the 26th book or something?
I don't know. This is like the 15th or whatever.
Okay.
There's been two since then or three. I don't know. But this came out in 2019. And it was written, my co-author, Mike McMullen, and I wrote it for young men who don't read. You know, so it's written. It's an action adventure story with a good, you know, moral conservative tone, but it's not overtly political. And it involves a father and two sons who go elk hunting and end up thwarting a terrorist plot. And so my co-author Mike wanted to do a sequel, and I've mm-hmm. been thinking about do we just pick up the adventure with these guys or what, you know? And then I had this idea for doing a sequel in a larger arena. You know, a larger background, you know. And so mm-hmm. it's not just a small Colorado Valley where they happen to run in some terrorists from Chechnya, right? But, and also some American guys who were, so I could write about the terrorists. I had no idea what Chechens talk about or think, you know. So I can't yeah. inhabit their minds. But fortunately, they had a couple of Antifa types working with them, so I could get in there. But then the question came. And here's what triggered it. I was watching this emergence now of people like, say, Chris Cuomo.
Oh, yeah. I've been following that.
Brother of Andrew Cuomo.
Mm-hmm.
Who is bounced. One was bounced from the governorship, and the other one was simultaneously just about bounced from CNN.
Mm-hmm.
And I was back watching earlier clips of Chris Cuomo when he was on CNN. And he was an absolute cheerleader for.
No, he was a stalwart. He was strident.
Oh, totally. A hectoring.
Accusatory.
Right. Lecturing.
Lecturing. Oh, he was vilifying.
Right. He was a male Karen right
yeah.
in your face every night. Those people who did not have the wisdom that he had to get vaccinated against COVID, mm-hmm. or that didn't wear their mask, or that didn't socially distance, or
they were morally repugnant.
Yes, right.
To him,
right.
He let it be known that we should be, that those who would not cooperate should be jailed. I believe
we're close to that. Flirted with that. Certainly, the notion that they were out infecting other people. By
yes.
And this is not just with vaccinations. Even he was championing lockdowns and.
The masks and everything.
Well, just like as his brother was, you know, who was then governor. In fact, his brother was so popular, he's the last alpha male in the Democratic Party, that there, this entity emerged called Cuomosexuals.
You know? No, I remember that, yeah.
Sort of like Antifa, not an organization, but an entity, right? Not fully organized. But now he's singing from another hymnal altogether. Have you heard him?
Yes. Now he's, well, you would have to interpret it. He calls it long COVID or COVID. I'm damaged or I'm suffering. I made several allusions to the fact that he was dealing with issues related to what he said were COVID. But what I hear in my ear when I hear that is, oh, you mean the treatments for COVID you're having long-term effects of.
Right, or the combination of the treatment and the COVID itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I was watching this one clip just before I came over, in which he and Don Lemon, who is just an appalling human being, right?
God, is that guy.
They're mocking those who didn't have the... Can you imagine that? And they were talking about Dr. Scott Atlas, who was representing Trump. He's telling people to inject horse dewormer, right?
Right.
Says the man who now takes an ivermectin a day, you know, Chris Cuomo. And a lot of that, some of what he was saying came out of a New York Times article where they're finally acknowledging that there were consequences sometimes for people who did this. Of course, they're still lying and suppressing, and they're making believe this was like a side effect, you know, and just some rare batch that went wrong or something, you know.
Oh, yeah. It's just like it was just like the process of determining where that came from.
Right. That's right. Oh, and then, let's see.
And then you got John Stewart even and all these other, you know, we talked about these people that they're finally having to admit the doubt of the benefit, as we talked about
before. That's right.
So when you hear all this crap and they swallow it whole, after a while, they're kind of looking around going, okay, I'm gonna be a real rebel and come out here and say, well, that didn't really make sense.
Well, you know, and I was disappointed because I just bought a franchise in the Bat Wet Market for Kansas City.
Man.
Bats Are Us, you know?
Oh, yeah. That would have been great.
Didn't work out. It did not take off, unlike most bats who are pretty capable of flying around and making your life miserable. So
the Wuhan lab was at fault for all that.
And, you know, I was reading about Naomi Wolf, who was one of my heroines, who's a red-pilled in a major way. And
love her.
And it's unrequited at this point.
Yeah.
But she hasn't really met me. I mean, when she meets me, it's all over. I got to be careful. For the sake of her husband, who's like a Green Beret or something, you know, I got to watch it. But what makes her angry is that these people having misinformed you in some cases, some of them having disinformed you, that is consciously giving you bad information, then scolding
and haranguing
and haven't apologized,
shaming,
have
not apologized, just like Cuomo.
Right.
He's admitting he was, wait a minute, you're admitting you were wrong without admitting you were wrong.
Yeah.
Why? And then you're not saying you're sorry. You yourself are suffering from what you feel is a very serious ramification for your own actions that you shamed everybody into, but you don't feel compelled to apologize?
Yeah, no.
You're not responsible in any way?
No. Those horses, you haven't said, why did I ever call it a horse dewormer, you know?
I'm taking it every day now.
Yeah, right. Maybe you're a horse. Maybe you're being dewormed. I mean, Robert Kennedy has brain worms now, apparently. But so anyhow, that got me to thinking about a plot, right?
Okay.
Now, like I say, this is a one of those warnings you put up on the screen beforehand. What we're talking about here is a plot of a novel. We're not talking about real life, okay? So if you have children, make sure they know that. It's not like War of the Worlds, you know, where you're just sort of dropping in on people you know, back in when Orson Welles did that in like 1939 or whatever, my parents lived in Newark, New Jersey. The rocket ships from Mars landed in Grover Mills, New Jersey, and they were marching towards Newark. My mother was one of those who was scared and in a panic, you know.
Oh my gosh!
In fact, totally. This is a digression, but it's useful. This was totally weird. I just so happened to be working with a client in down New Jersey Shore in Tom's River. And then I was going to drive to visit a friend who lived in Princeton. This was some years ago. And there's no direct route. I didn't want to take the parkway and the other highway, so I just took the back road route. And I run into, unexpectedly, a huge traffic jam.
A huge what?
Traffic jam.
Oh, okay.
And then I realized it was Halloween night, 1989.
Okay.
The 50th anniversary of the War of the Worlds, the Orson Welles War of the Worlds radio broadcast that terrified America.
Right.
And I'm driving into Grover Mills, New Jersey. I drove right into the epicenter of the celebration, so it took me hours to get through the whole place, but
didn't see that one coming.
No, that was a talking point, but it was a long day. So anyhow, what we're talking about here is a novel. In my plot, and I have to put my heroes, my father and his two, now they're adolescents in this, they're a little older now.
Okay.
I have to give them something to do to solve this problem.
All right.
And so the question then becomes, and here's the premise, is that everyone who's been vaccinated is dying or dead, right? And so the working title of my book is Skeleton Crew.
Okay.
Because skeleton crews are going to be running America.
Okay.
And we'll presume similar things are going on around the world. I'm going to just keep my canvas as local as possible. Now, you read Gib Kerr's book, right?
Mm-hmm. It's a great book.
But it tries to tell the whole story.
Well, yeah. I mean, it reads like he tore it right out of the news. I mean,
right.
Yeah. He uses AOC as a...
Right.
And the governor of Texas, and all these characters are in it.
Right.
And it makes it kind of... It gives you a pathway to imagine this dystopian situation we're getting into and how it might unfold.
Right. In his case, it was a civil war between the red states and the blue states. But what I wanted to do, and it makes it in a sense easier and more controllable, is to have this all as a backdrop, but have my guys doing something very specific because they're a little semi-military group. But then I decided, the first question I have to ask, and I throw it open to you, and then I just started doing some research. And by the way, I've been vaccinated, so my whole family's gone. I take no glory in this, sequence. But who survived? Who are the survivors? We have some idea who these people would be. And who are the people that you know that didn't take the vaccine?
Yeah, I know quite a few. It's mainly the people I know that did is easier to define.
Yes.
The people who haven't figured out that media is a complete propaganda machine and that you can't trust a thing you hear out of the moldy mainstream media.
Right.
And how, Jack, well before the emergence of the disease.
Right. The pandemic.
The pandemic. All of it had been announced previously by several people in several different meetings and several different platforms. All your Bill Gateses and your Faucis and your...
They were wargaming.
They were bragging about it
before
it was released. They had already developed the vaccines before the disease had emerged. And there was bragging about, we'll be doing this and we'll be plotting... I'm telling you, it might as well have been in magic marker in big letters.
Well, the phrase they used was war game, which they did. So all the protocols, lockdowns, all that stuff was prearranged, which was why it was so relatively easy for them to roll this out, right? I don't know that they had planned to release that virus. I don't know that it was planned to release at all. But they were almost eager to have something like this happen. And so it was a great exercise of power, and they could show.
They did plan to do it. It was obvious, and if you paid attention, there's no doubt, zero doubt. It was completely planned.
Well, I would hold back a little bit so we don't get canceled from all our platforms, but I am.
I'm talking about in this make-believe.
Oh, in our novel, okay.
In the novel, it's completely planned.
Right, novel, it's completely
planned. Because you got to... you got to have that anger and that, you know, at some point in the book, you're going to want to bring up that device of the great betrayal.
Yeah.
When suddenly the veil opens up and everybody goes, wow, it was all there and it was all kept from me.
Right.
Or I didn't see it because I was watching football and watching baseball and watching all the college stuff. And I had to go to my kid's game. And all. How was I supposed to know that information that's do or die, life and death, was out there?
Yeah, but here's what happens in the novel, right?
Okay.
Sometimes we attribute too much wisdom to our conspirators among us, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the novel, the vaccine saves the good people, right? You follow me?
No.
So let's say they roll it out, but the vaccine, because they're all vaccinated, right? They all the good people, all the bright people who follow the media are vaccinated.
Oh,
and saved,
I see what you're saying. Yeah, there's...
And the people who die are the, you know, the rubes and the Trumpsters and whatnot, you know? So for instance, do you know what state, and do you know what state had the highest percentage of people vaccinated?
Yeah, I'm going to say highest number of people vaccinated would probably be Hawaii.
Hawaii was right up there. It's right maybe two or three. Number one state, here's a correlation that it's almost difficult to overlook.
Oh, Massachusetts.
That's right there. There's like a top five. They're all next to each other.
Okay.
The number one state is the same state that was the most, that gave Trump the least percentage of its votes.
Wow, that's why I
guess. But you're close. Hawaii, you're in the right ballpark.
It's got to be, I don't know. I give up.
Vermont.
Okay. Vermont.
Right. They needed a vaccination against Ben and Jerry's.
Right.
Anything, you know, just. But, I mean, it was literally Trump got 30% of the Vermont vote, the lowest of any state. The D.C. District Columbia gave him 5%, but that doesn't really count. And the cutoff was 95% when they're, you know, they're doing the percentages. It was 95 plus. It was 95 plus. So it was over 95. How can, in one state, everyone gets vaccinated, and Rhode Island, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Maine were almost no better. New Jersey, New York, in my novel, they're all gone. Right?
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, you wonder about it. You really do wonder about it because there's been so much disinformation.
Yeah, and in those parts of the world. Where the disinformation reigns supreme. There's usually no alternatives. You talk to your neighbors, they all feel the way you do, blah, blah, blah. You're all, and those good souls who don't want to get it are being so pressured. They're being not allowed to sit inside restaurants. They're not allowed to go to churches. You know, they're excluded from society. And so they yield because it's just almost too problematic not to. So that's one. And then corollary is what state is the least vaccinated?
Okay, the state it's got to be like Oklahoma or something.
Close. The state that gave Trump the highest percentage of votes was also the state that was least vaccinated.
Alaska?
Wyoming. Yeah. And then there's almost a perfect correlation, right? So what happens in my novel, Skeleton Crew, is that a certain class of people are left, right, to run the infrastructure in America, to take over, take charge. And it's not the ones that the Bill Gateses of the world anticipated, right? The flaw in their plan was their belief that the wise and smart elite intellectuals would all get vaccinated, which they did, right? And they killed them all, right, in the book. So what's left now?
Well, that's ridiculous, Jack, because for them to do something that evil, Bill Gates would have to be an avowed eugenicist. He would have had to say things many, many times in history like, we can eliminate a large amount of the population if we do vaccines properly.
Right.
And how the number one thing he wanted was to reduce the population. That's what he hoped to accomplish with his life, which strangely enough is the same thing his dad did.
Yeah, I'm right. His father was a big Planned Parenthood guy. And
so, I mean, that's far-fetched.
I know. Yeah, I wish it were. You know, it's odd how when rich people reach a certain amount of money. The Rockefellers were into this totally.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
I mean, even when they're like Nelson and his brother David, even more so, David Rockefeller. And they had a plan. It was like NIM 1970 or something. Henry Kissinger was involved. And they were under the they worked on the assumption there were too many people in the world. I mean, this goes back to the eugenicist movement. We've talked about it a little bit. But in the 20s, was they're all the thing, you know.
It was huge.
And among progressives. So in Buck versus Bell, for instance, Oliver Wendell Holmes writes the decision for the Supreme Court to allow the state of Virginia to forcibly sterilize people it thinks are not bright enough, right? And the
sounds like Canada.
That's where we're going. And the person on the hot seat there, the person who was about to be sterilized, was white. It wasn't even racist. Margaret Sanger wasn't explicitly racist. She was just anti-moron, and we've talked about this before. And for her, the morons was the 40% of the American public who did not do well on the IQ test you took to get into First World War. So, yeah, no, they've been among us for all the time, but that does not mean that they're as smart as they think they are.
Absolutely not.
So in my novel, their plan is undone by the fact that they have thoroughly propagandized their people. Their people were to be the survivors in this world. And they turned out not to be. So then, who's left, right? And now I'm writing a novel. I mean this literally. So your advice here would be welcome. I need a plot twist, the plot premise for my heroes to get involved with, right?
Okay.
So I believe in heroes. See, I'm a little less cynical than you are. I like people. And my book will be upbeat because all the good people will survive. You know?
Jack says he's more cynical than I.
No. I'm saying I'm less cynical than you.
Or less cynical than I.
Right.
But I say Jack is Pollyanna.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. By your standards, yes, I'm Pollyanna. And I'll even accept that.
I'm just saying, hey, let's weigh this thing here.
So in my book, I want a positive ending. You know, I want
the
world to turn into a brighter place. As a way of comparison, we haven't had many experiences with like mass death, but we did in Europe, and was probably the 13th century with the Black Death, and these plagues would occur periodically, and which nations were losing half their population, and some places more than that. But what happened afterwards? You know, people don't talk about that. But what happened after the Black Death was an economic bonanza because there was all of this stuff, right? And everyone had a hand now in doing something, right? You didn't have poor just hanging around the cities doing nothing. Everyone could find something to do. So it's not a fully dystopian picture of life post the die-off, the great die-off. And it also happens gradually. So, you know, you can make a transition. First thing it would seem to me is you got to get control of your infrastructure, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, fortunately, the people that Bill Gates hangs out with, you know, other than maybe fine-tuning the IT systems, probably don't do much in the way of, like, opening gas valves or, you know, running steam plants or, you know, doing the kind of things, running railroads.
Jack, they don't open the gas cap on their cars.
Right.
They don't have a gas cap.
Yeah, right. They're all electric now, right?
Right.
And so the possibility, it seems to me, correct me if I'm wrong, of the infrastructure being maintained, except maybe in poor New England where everyone's dead, you know. It's a Stephen King novel. It's Stephen King territory. What a creep he turned out to be.
Yeah.
I mean, he's an utterly deranged
loser.
Trump derangement guy, you know?
I just want to hang out with him and Robert De Niro for the weekend.
Weekend at Bernie's.
You know listen to their brilliance.
It's odd how...
they have no solutions of any about... they're like 12-year-olds.
I mean, they make Michael Moore sound, you know, discerning by comparison. And they rant. You know, another one in that school was Ken Burns.
Mm.
You know, who are prepared to get on the video and just rant for 3 minutes about things. And people who are watching who know anything about anything are thinking, huh? Come on, what's this about, you know? But the people who survived... And I got a sense of this because I have a book coming out on January 6th. It's called Ashley, The Untold Story of the Women of January 6th. And what I did not expect to find, I chose 10 women. My binder full, I have a binder full of women. Yeah. You remember
Seth
that
phrase? Romney, sure.
Mike Mitt Romney, right. He got in trouble for that.
Well, they got him for the, they busted him for the dog on the roof. They busted him for the binder of women.
Right.
He actually did a lot worse things than that, but that's stuff they liked.
Right. Well, people could relate to that, like shooting dogs, right?
Yeah.
As
mean.
Yeah, right. You know, it's odd because I was just talking to my daughter yesterday, and she said, Jack, I mean, Dad, tell me you didn't write the Christy Noem book, right? And I said, no, I didn't. I didn't write it. And she goes, I thought you had an offer to write the book. I said, God, I forgot all about this. So I went back into my emails, and there it was.
You know? Oh, yeah?
And it said, hey, by the way, you know, we are looking for someone to brush up Christy Noem's manuscript.
Uh-huh.
And then they said, right now it's too, it's not personal enough, and it's too ranty, RANT-Y. Is this something that interests you, right? And I probably said yes. I think I did. But it never came to pass. A lot of these projects, you know, you get them dangled and they never come to pass. So I was spared that. But this was 3 years ago.
Wow.
So she had a lot of time to, because at that time I was dealing with these same people. And this is a kind of a major digression here, but bear with me. I was dealing with these same people on a book. I'm not going to mention names. By a very prominent political news person, conservative blonde, you know, there's lots of them, but this one is extremely prominent. And that one went sideways. I was the third person on the book, right? And they wanted the publishers, it was a big publisher, they wanted to make an anti-Trump book. And the woman is not anti-Trump. It's just all the worst things about the publishing industry. And so I worked on about 2 weeks and said, here's what I'd do, you know. No, we want some anti-Trump stuff. So that didn't come to pass. But in the process, and as Christy Noem argues sometimes, the authors don't even know it's in the book. And they obviously should know, and they should read it. And,
right.
But they get into so many hands on these books. And I've done about 30, 35 of these projects. Everyone that I've done with a male has gone totally smoothly. Right? Everyone that I've done with a female, it's just, you know.
Not worked out, huh?
I mean, I've gotten through. I mean, the ones that I've gotten through is like where I was the third person on the book and the publisher just said, enough's enough. Just finish the book, you know. But it's a different beast altogether.
Now, it kind of reminded me of that Hemingway quote. Yeah. Hemingway. You know, it's wonderful how you write women. How do you do that so well?
Yeah. And what was his answer?
What was it? I just write for a man and I take out logic and reason. Is that it?
I remember that. That's
some horrible quote. We would never say that.
And I'm not laughing here. I have a cold and, yes. So if my nose runs, by the way, bear with me.
Hemingway's bad.
And, but anyhow, of the 10 women I'm profiling in this book, it's a serious book, on January 6th, which shocked me, because I wasn't expecting it, wasn't looking for it. You know, in January 6th, we're talking, you know, now we're 9 months into the whole COVID panic. We haven't even gotten to the vaccines yet.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one of these women was protesting the vaccine lockdowns and the lockdowns and the masking from day one. Every one of them was an activist. And for some of them, it was what got them into politics.
Hmm.
And these are independently minded people from all over the country. Most of them, you know, of middle to working class, you know, nurses, therapists. I mean, none of them, only one of the 10 was a doctor and a lawyer. That's Dr. Simone Gold, who is a leading, you know, anti-lockdown activist.
I heard her many, many interviews.
Yeah, a very sharp lady. But that didn't stop her from going to prison. She was there to talk about, not about the election outcome, but about, you know, it's interesting. She was there to talk about medicine and how it had gone wrong. And this whole oppressive, coercive nature of the COVID regime. And so this is pre-vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
Although several people knew it was coming and they'd already said, I'm not taking this, you know, period. She had been fully vaccinated up to, she's not anti-vax. She had, you know, children, her children are vaccinated. She's working as an ER at the medical centers, but they utterly, totally, she organizes this press conference for the doctors, frontline, America's frontline doctors. It gets 17 million views on Facebook within hours. Trump tweets it. Twitter, Facebook, boom, boom, pull it off the air, right? And everything she said was right.
And that, by the way, folks out there in America, when that kind of stuff happens, and
yeah.
they jerk the content down immediately,
yeah.
what do you need, a billboard?
Yeah, right.
To know
yeah.
that when they do that, it's because they're lying?
You don't need a weatherman to tell you which way the wind blows.
That's know? Right. And so it's back to that whole, come on now. The people that are, to answer your question of who's going and who's staying
right.
in that scenario,
yeah.
the people who would go are all the zero-sum thinkers.
Yeah.
The people who don't do their own research.
Right.
The people who are spoon-fed information from the propaganda media. The people who, when somebody has a white coat on, there are no questions ever asked. It's authority. You do whatever that person says.
That's right.
And so those poor rules followers, those
right,
they're going right off the edge in that scenario of that novel.
I mean, in these yeah, in that novel, but in real life, this was happening on before January 6th. Every one of these women, except for Ashley Babbitt, who lives in San Diego, and she had to fly. And then she wore a mask, it's like a MAGA mask, you know, it's like, they drove. They drove from like Boise, Idaho, or Colorado Springs.
Really?
Or,
all of them, huh?
Atlanta, right. None of them wanted to fly because none of them wanted to put up with the BS that flying involved at that time.
Yeah.
They're just the oppressive regime of it. You know, I remember flying into Buffalo that summer and being met by National Guard troops wanting to look at your card that you had to fill out, which I didn't fill out. And I just walked through them, you know, waiting to get shot or something. But they just let me go. I don't know. No one stopped me. They didn't want to be there. They're just all there. It's all part of theater. But no, so that's – these people survive. And they tend to be fairly resourceful. All of them are gun owners, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, virtually all of them. I mean, very close to all of them. So you have that block surviving. So then where does the conflict come in the world post the die-off, the great die-off? It comes from, I would say, the other great block of unvaccinated people in the United States.
Military? Ex-military.
Ex-military, right. Those are the guys who are going to be running things.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be called back into service.
The people that are is small town to the point where they're in a real true rural existence.
Right. Those are our people. You know, they're part of this the good
okay.
guy. The good
so there
guy
are world. Other. There's another group.
Where is the bad guy cohort coming from?
Oh yeah, yeah. The people who are so evil that they knew what this was all about, and so they didn't take the
like the Lex Luthor types.
The Lex, yes.
The Soros types. No.
The people who faked shots for the cameras and all that
yeah.
stuff.
But yeah, but they can't run the power plants. The undocumented, right?
Oh, yes.
We've got 20 million people who've snuck into the country who've never been vetted, let alone
good
vaccines.
Good point. Yeah.
And so what happens? They're left, right? So you basically have, it would seem to me, And, you know, I'm open to suggestion at this point because I may be overlooking something like the Lex Luthor types, you know, who are probably going to try now, having effed up, to mobilize the, you know, the illegals, right? Mm-hmm. And then the illegals, either, I'm just talking a lot here. I haven't thought this through very far, so you can help me to correct me, but you have the cartels. That those are organizations that are capable of, you know, coercing and organizing people into some sort of military force or whatever, you know.
And they're already working hand in glove with people that we wouldn't imagine that they would be working hand in glove with.
Like the NGO types. Yes. Most of whom are dead, but the Lex Luthor NGO types mm-hmm. are still alive. Lex Luthor, by the way, is the, for those of younger.
The villain of Superman.
Right, the ultimate villain. Mm-hmm. The Goldfinger or the, whatever.
The guy that looks like Hans, what's his name?
Klaus Schwab.
Klaus Schwab.
right. The banality of evil. But then there's another class. I mean, and here's the issue. Because a lot of these illegals want to be on the good guy's side, right? They don't want to be part of the, you know, the cartels, armies, you know, and be living like worrying about where their head is getting left the next day, you know. So anyhow, that sets up the scenario. And then our heroes have to find a role within this larger drama. Because I don't want to have to tell the whole story of who's fighting who and all that, you know. I want them to have one assignment in this battle that, you know, will take place. And I haven't figured that out yet, but I have an idea. So, but those are the forces afoot. Just like I'm reading now Eric Larson's newest book. And he's writing about the Civil War. And it's an interesting way to do it because it's the same pattern that I would like to do. You know, we have the whole Civil War unfolding in the background and all the elections and whatnot. But he's writing about Fort Sumter, right?
Okay.
Everything that leads up to Fort Sumter. Have you ever read any of his books? Devil in
no.
the White City,
no.
Splendor, Splendor read, in the Vile.
I've never read novels.
No, this is nonfiction.
Oh, no, I haven't.
Excellent author. He's, you know, bestseller and deservedly, you know. But he begins this book with a prologue about January 6th, right? And I saw where he was going. I said, nope, I don't want to read it. I don't want to lose. I'll read it when I'm finished because I don't want to lose respect for this guy, you know, before we get started. I don't want to be looking for parallels like the Civil War and January 6th as though they're some sort of, because in fact, you and I know the only real parallel to January 6th is 9/11 and Pearl Harbor, right?
Oh, yeah, it was worse then, yeah.
It just as bad, right?
This is bad.
So, but anyhow, they that is the world I would envision. And I think at the end of the day, and this is why I take my Pollyannish view into these kind of phenomena, it has the potential to be a better world, right?
Yeah, well.
I mean, it'll take a while to regenerate and you get people back. But think about the things that you won't have to worry about in this world, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you got all kinds of things you can write about, the turbo cancers that have already begun emerging.
Yeah.
I know most people haven't heard about that, aren't aware of it, or think it's a lie or a fabrication. They've never seen cancers that grow this fast before.
Yeah.
And so, Cloward and Piven is basically taking place. Uh-huh. And all this in the novel, the mass deaths that would happen, would play into the crashing of the medical system, would be completely gone, and because it would be overwhelmed immediately.
Right. It would be, that's a point. That is a point to be had.
All the supply chains have dried up. They already are. We're basically surviving on things that are already in the funnel right now. The food supply would be completely disrupted. People would be foraging, eating tree bark, stuff like that.
See, this is where I'm more optimistic than you are.
If the people who took the vax died?
Well, the healthcare system collapses.
Well, yeah.
Totally, right?
Yeah.
But
that means everybody who didn't take it who have any kind of terminal disease are gone too.
Right. I mean, it's going to be tragic. A lot of people die, and fortunately, it's only a novel, so you don't have to feel too bad for them. And they'll happen. They'll die off stage, you know, as they say, right? So you won't be seeing that. I'm not going to be, you know.
Well, they'll be wheeling them in the streets in a bucket like they did during the plague.
Right. And in fact, the cities will
bring
be gone.
Bring out your dead.
The big cities will be gone, right?
And oh, yeah.
They'll have collapsed. However, like I say, in the red states, and the red state people are the people who do all the producing anyhow, right?
It'll be much more of an Amish lifestyle.
I mean, it'll be a lot more, but there's no reason electricity has to go down or...
Oh, it will.
Not necessarily.
Well, the same wonderful people who introduced all this stuff.
Right.
They have something coming up in November that they don't want to happen. They don't want it to happen.
Well, you get back to my novel now. I'm not talking about real life right now. Okay.
So in the novel, there might be some bad people who might say, hey, you know how we... You're reading about people getting arrested for more fentanyl than could kill everybody in the world about every other week.
Right.
Why do you think they're important all that much?
Yeah.
Because they're going to sell it? No, they can't sell that much. Everybody'd be dead six times over.
Right.
So why do they keep bringing it in? You know, and when there's when people are dying off all over the place, what's to stop them from going, we're that much closer to getting everybody's stuff? So let's drop a little fentanyl in all the water supplies. That kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, that's
always... Let's bring down the grid. I mean, it's going to be like one after another after another. So it can't just be this isolated thing where everybody's keeling over.
No, but I would argue that the people who are in the process of dying...
Yeah.
...want to save themselves. They want to die comfortably. Right.
Okay.
They don't want to die in the cold and the dark with no food. Right.
Right.
But the people, the bad guys, the thugs. I mean, the thugs, unvaccinated thugs in the cities.
Mm-hmm.
They have a cornucopia. You know, I mean, at least in the short term, right, of all the stuff you know they could possibly want.
Okay.
Now the cities will be unlivable. They'll be zombie zones. Very quickly.
They'll get their wish, which is to secede.
Yeah.
They're all trying to secede from the great unwashed. All these sophisticated metropolitan areas with their nullification and their sanctuary city status and all their other stuff. They want so badly to get away. Well, this will give them their ticket out.
Yeah.
You're going off to with the Comet Haley Bopp.
Well, you know, I would say, and I'm getting back to my Pollyannish worldview. I remember, you know, when I was working with Ingram's and I would moderate these monthly roundtables of CEO types, business leaders. And we did one with agribusiness about, it was like right after 9/11, or maybe it was in 2008, 1 year of like major crisis. And they were unbothered. They said, no, our businesses will function, you know, because people need our service. We're prepared to provide it. And, you know, we'll make sure that it happens. I would say that in my scenario, the agribusiness rebounds much more quickly than you can imagine.
Well, they got to get fuel.
Right. Because the fuel
they gotta get electricity.
Is in the control of the people who are people also, right? The Koch brothers, I mean, those guys are, you know. Now, but here's the one service. And there was actually a movie about this, I think, made before. One government service... One large government agency did not have a vax mandate.
Okay, that kind of surprises me.
I mean, it's the only one.
It was probably the one that deals with administering the vax mandates.
No, it's much bigger and much more specific. It's the one that delivered 60 million votes in 2020. The post office.
Really?
The post office was exempt from the vaccine. And I wrote about this some years ago, and I tried to get an answer. And it's getting run around at every level. No one would give me a straight answer. And so I'm saying, hey, my office is right next to a big postal facility, right? So I just went back and talked to the workers. No, we're not getting back. We don't have to get vaccinated. No. They make us wear a mask when we're inside, but we don't have to get vaccinated, right? And that was their reward for delivering the 2020 election. Because leading up to that election, their union leaders were telling them if Trump wins, he's going to, the service is over. It's an existential threat here we're facing. And so these people are fearful of keeping their jobs. And then you tell them, okay, deliver 60 million votes. Don't cheat, right? You know, when you're going through that 80% Republican area, make sure everyone gets their votes delivered.
Sure.
Right? Anyhow, so.
Wow.
But no, I remain optimistic. I will, hopeful.
Well, maybe when you get through with this dystopian novel, you'll have a, you will be either really optimistic or you'll be crying.
No, see, I'm going to have my good guys save the day, you know? I mean, all good fiction is about that. It seems to me all good fiction should be, have room for heroism. And should give young males, especially, role models, people to look up to. And you don't see that as much, as nearly as much as you should. I don't know, for young men, I don't know how they even survive, you know. But I'm glad to see these guys, these frat guys on campuses. The proletariat rising up, you know.
Against
the evil powers that have trying to suppress them and marginalize them and humiliate them. But
yeah, it's funny. This thing that's going on right now in culture that we see, that it gets lumped into this big, giant category that is an invented BS word. And the word is anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
It's not even correct.
No, it
and it's a Marxist ploy.
Uh-huh.
To lump every, you think about how complex this situation actually is. And you say, well, I'm going to criticize Netanyahu or Zionism or religious Jews or secular Jews or the Knesset or the secret agents of... it's like, it's all lumped into this thing. You're anti-Semite.
Well, see, but in a sense, it's a revenge of one side against the other. So if we criticize George Soros, right? You know that. I mean, that's the way, every time you criticize George Soros, I mean, they've been using this against us for
exactly.
years.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's Netanyahu or Soros
right.
or Rothschild or anybody you want to mention. It's all lumped into one thing. And what are the Palestinians?
Semites.
They're Semites.
Right.
So they're trying to obfuscate. They're trying to confuse it all. So they lump it into this term. And now nobody can argue with any aspect of it. It's like, but what if I don't trust our government? What if I think they're against us and they're against all that's good and they're against Jews?
Right.
Well, what kind of Jews are they against? Don't say anything because you're anti-Semite.
No, you got to pull that out. It gets too complicated.
I think we ought to use words that describe what people are against or what they're for, or specifically, whom is it you hate?
Right.
Or you got a beef with.
Or, I mean, the implication that you hate someone because you oppose their values, such as they are. I mean, you don't hate Jews because you don't like George Soros.
Exactly.
You don't hate Jews because
The implication they want to make.
Right. Exactly. And the left has been using it on the right since World War II.
Yes.
And if they get a little of it in return, I'm not going to complain too much. But they go too far, of course. So we'll take that up at some other
time. Right, right.
Sorry for that. No. It was a good last-minute
clarification.
Digression. And a show filled with digressions. And that show is, by the way, being broadcast from Real Media Studios here in Overland Park.
We love it here.
R-E-A-L Media. Great place. And the show's name, of course, is?
Upstream with Cashel and Edge. Now, for our new listeners, what's that about?
Quickly, it is a derivation of a Andrew Breitbart quote,
right,
where he said that all politics is downstream from culture. So we didn't want to do politics. We wanted to go upstream to where the culture was, and that's where we are today. You may not have noticed that, but that's allegedly where we went. So we'll see you next week, guys. Take care.
Bye-bye.